Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And our topic for today is...
I found out my partner has been unfaithful. Now what?
Oh, my. And this, of course, probably won't surprise our listeners who know that I am indeed a couples therapist in my profession. And this comes up a lot in my practice. I think infidelity, when I was writing the book that we'll be talking about shortly, I did a kind of a seat-of-the-pants guess as to what proportion of my couples that I work with are dealing with infidelity. And my rough guess was around a third. And it certainly comes up quite a lot. So it's a really important topic. Mm-hmm. So before we get into that, we would just like to invite you to do the things that people do with podcasts to let other people know about it. So, of course, tell your friends about the Couples Therapy in 7 Words podcasts and rate us and comment and do that sort of thing, because that helps the search algorithms find it. Because we'd like to spread the word. We're getting, our listenership has been steadily growing, and we'd like to keep that going. So before we get into our topic for today, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. I say that somewhat jokingly because we're the sponsor, but it's a word about the book that is the basis of this podcast.
This book is full of wise advice that may either help encourage people to change their behaviors without therapy or help them into counseling that might help them to break some bad habits before it's too late.
And that was a quote from one of the rave reviews about the book, and the name of the book is...
Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
By me, and that's Dr. Bruce Chalmer, and it's available anywhere books are sold, and you can also get it in Audible format from Amazon, and you can also get it for Kindle from Amazon, as well as on paper anywhere books are sold. And here is another one of the reviews we've been getting.
Super nerdy. Dr. Chalmer is a psychologist working with couples, and he takes his 30-plus years of experience and puts the big thing he's learned into a short, easily digestible, but still very full and practical book. Give me a book with case studies and the practical nature behind the issues, and I'm in. Sold. The writing was easy and conversational, yet absolutely conveyed his thoughts and authority on the subject matter. It was really an enjoyable read.
And I have to say, I often mention to people, I think I'm a recovering nerd, but maybe I'm still a current nerd. Hard to say.
I think so.
and you would know better than anybody else would. So I invite you to get a hold of the book, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And when you've read the book, send us your feedback. You can email me, bruce@brucechalmer.com. And now, back to the podcast. So, our topic for today, as we said, is I found out my partner has been unfaithful. Now what? So we are talking about infidelity, which is a very common occurrence in my practice. I guessed in preparing my book that it was about a third of the couples that I work with are dealing with infidelity. Very common issue. So that is our topic for today.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us, Bruce, how do you define infidelity?
Well, that's a great question. And of course, like a slippery therapist that I am, you know, you don't expect a straight answer from a therapist, do you?
Well,
occasionally.
Of course not.
occasionally you do. But
I was going to say, what does infidelity mean to you?
Yeah.
And I guess that really is it, isn't it?
That really is. I mean, that's the issue. I don't attempt to define it because it is so, you know, idiosyncratic. You know what I mean? Some people, for some couples, if somebody goes in the next room and masturbates, that's cheating, you know? Tends not to work very well for most couples, but that, you know, I've seen that happen. Is it cheating if somebody is watching porn? Is it cheating if there's, somebody's online with somebody they don't really know, but there's another human being on the other end? You know, the lines are very fuzzy these days, especially with the internet. So the first thing, and this what I talk about in the book, I give 5 guidelines for how to manage this. And the first of the guidelines is check your assumptions, because it isn't always clear what infidelity is. And what I find fascinating is it changes in the course of conversation.
So, what do you mean?
Well, in the sense that the very things I was talking about, you know, this is something I hear a lot from couples in my office. Someone will say, you know, if you had asked me 6 months ago, what would I do if my husband or wife or whatever, especially, I hear this especially from women, what would I do if my husband cheated on me? I would have said, along with all my friends, I would have said, are you kidding me? I have more respect than that. I would throw his stuff out on the lawn and he'd be gone and that would be it. And of course, she's sitting there saying this together with her husband where they're actually trying to work on their marriage. So that's a great example of, you know, you bump into this stuff and your assumptions might be challenged. You know, maybe it's not impossible to save a marriage, even though there's been infidelity. So that's guideline number one. Check your assumptions, because you might discover that if you're willing to question them, and I don't mean jettison them, I just mean question them. You know, if you're willing to look at them, they might be not exactly what you thought they would be. So that's a place to start. And that's true for the person who cheated as well.
Sure. And I guess you have to be willing to have the conversation with each other is, you know, where you're willing to, you know, where you're drawing your lines.
Exactly.
Is it physical? Is it emotional? Because there can be emotional affairs too.
There absolutely can. And that, of course, is where a lot of times that's where, you know, people will come in and one person will say, well, my spouse had an emotional affair. And the spouse will say, I was just good friends. You know, I wasn't having sex. Where's the line?
Yeah.
But there is a line somewhere. It's just not always so clear, and it can move. But, you know, emotional affairs can cause every bit as much distress as sexual affairs can. So that's guideline one. Guideline two, what I say is you don't need all the details. You know, the way I put it in the book, just slightly facetiously, is, look, if you know your partner had sex with someone else, you don't need to know what positions they used. Yeah. I don't want to be black and white about that one, because you do need to know that it happened. And, you know, the idea, usually what goes along with affairs is a great deal of deception and often outright lying. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Someone will say, hey, are you messing around with somebody else? And they'll say, absolutely not. You must be crazy to think that. And they'll get all offended, you know. And then when they finally own up to it, that's when, of course, you're going to want to know. So when I said, when I asked that question, you were lying, right? And they need to hear, yes, I was lying. This is when and who. And, you know, whether or not they identify the individual, they need to be able to at least somehow confirm, you know, the person's suspicions. What they don't need is this sort of, you know, micro level detail about exactly what did you do and how did you do it. Because that usually ends up just dragging the person who's been cheated on through a bunch of stuff that isn't going to be helpful. You know, if you think, if you've been cheated on and you think, if only I was more like the affair partner, you know, my spouse wouldn't have cheated on me, or I would, then I can compete successfully.
Well, sure, because it's demoralizing and you feel, you know, in addition to the humiliation, is that your self-esteem goes right in the toilet.
Well,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where, you know, the sort of obsessive focus on detail, it really doesn't help your self-esteem. All it really does is just distract you. The crisis you're having is whether or not you want to stay in the marriage. It's whether or not you can trust your spouse again. It's whether or not you can trust your own judgment again. Those are the things you have to work on. And that obsessive detail about what is the meaning of, you know, this particular text, or, you know, how come you were doing those things with her or him, but you wouldn't do it with me, you know? Those things usually don't get you very far. They're very normal, but that's why it's a guideline. It's, you really don't need all the details. And related to that is guideline number three. Monitoring your partner really won't help you build trust. I know that sounds like, shouldn't you insist that your partner show you their phone whenever you, that's the way people get busted these days. Yeah. Exactly.
Let me know where you're going every second.
Well, nowadays it's not just, let me know where you're going. It's, I'm going to put a tracker on your phone.
Exactly.
And I hear this all the time. It's almost standard now for people who've been cheated on that they, they're going to track their partner's phone. And yeah, I get it early on. It's a way of somehow trying to, what they want to see is that the partner isn't hiding anything. But being your partner's probation officer tends not to be a great basis for a relationship.
Yeah. Well, you don't build trust that way if you're going to have to sit around monitoring them every second.
Well, exactly. And you know, oddly enough, I mean, this may sound a little convoluted, but, you know, you don't want to be in a relationship with someone who would be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you want to know, even though your partner cheated on you, that they have some self-respect as well. That's one of the ironies here, you know. It's like you don't want them to be the perpetual bad boy or bad girl, you know, always having to atone for the rest of your lives for what they did. If you want that, it's not going to work well.
Yeah.
And that actually leads to guideline number four, which is be your best self, not your worst, which is frankly hard when you're panicking, you know, when you're angry and hurt and you know, that feeling of betrayal. But to the extent that you can focus on being a decent person yourself, even though your partner has notably failed in that respect, it's going to work better for you. And that's true, by the way, whether you stay together or not.
Hmm.
If you can respect your own dignity,
yeah,
and act accordingly.
So in other words, you're saying to your partner, you know, no, you know, you can go out with your friends and I'm not going to sit there like you're, like you said earlier, your probation officer, making sure I know where you are every second or checking up on you. And
oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly implicit. But I'm thinking even more, you're not going to spend your time thinking of wonderful ways to punish your partner and then carrying them out.
Oh, okay. I see.
Do you know what I mean? And so, yeah, you're absolutely right about, yeah, if you think the way you're going to have a good marriage is by putting your partner on a leash, it's not going to work.
Right.
But also,
so you're saying don't run out and have an affair of your own just
absolutely
to punish the person.
Okay. That, and also don't go out of your way to make your partner miserable, which I have met folks who have done.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, them wanting to get revenge or punish your partner.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and they'll often say, I need them to feel the way I felt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
It's an understandable, very human kind of response. It mm-hmm. just tends not to work well even for yourself.
So when they go low, we go high?
Yeah, there it's kind of that. You know, it is kind of that. And then that leads very nicely to the fifth guideline, which is forgiveness is up to you. And you can go to my, you know, we did some other podcasts on it or go to the book about it. I have a couple of chapters on forgiveness. What I mean by forgiveness is giving up the anger. It's letting go of having to be furious anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're faced with some really hard questions. But to get to that place of forgiveness, to be able to not be so angry, it's not so simple. You can't do it if you're still feeling hurt.
Yeah.
And that does take some time. And of course, your partner, once your partner's been busted, your partner of generally wants you to forgive way sooner than you're probably able to.
Mm-hmm.
And with respect for your partner, that's not your problem. And that you need to be able to know that. And again, with compassion, you know, it's like, yeah, that it's going to hurt your partner that you're not ready to forgive them. But that can't be your problem. Your problem is taking care of yourself, your own dignity, your own self-respect, and then you have some hard choices to make. Do you want to, if you want the relationship to work, you have to be able to get to this place where you can restore your partner to dignity in your eyes, which is kind of another way of describing forgiveness.
Hmm.
And it is not easy.
No, it's not.
To say the least.
Like you said, it's going to take time.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we do in this podcast is, of course, Judy, you know this, but we'll let our listeners know this, is we like to take a listener question. This is one that it'll be evident from the question it came from a while ago, sort of pre-pandemic times, because you'll note that our writer mentions that she goes to a high school reunion out of town. This is pre-COVID, but we thought it would be a really good question for today. So take it away, Judy.
Okay. Mary writes, "Dear Dr. Chalmer, John and I have been married about 25 years. John was always a workaholic, and now that our sons no longer live at home, he's working more than ever. I work too, but my job ends when my day does. Our marriage feels more like that of roommates. Our sex life is practically non-existent, and we don't really do much together anymore other than occasionally going out with friends. A little while ago, I went to my high school reunion out of town. I met up with my high school boyfriend, Randy, who is now divorced. Stupidly, I ended up spending the night with Randy. I knew it was wrong, but it had been such a long time that I felt so alive and desired. Randy asked me if I was going to divorce John. I said I didn't know, but I was too confused to make any moves. I wasn't going to tell John about it, but I kept getting texts from Randy. John saw my phone and confronted me, and I told him the truth. He was very angry and hurt and said he can never trust me again. I told him we need to talk about it. He said he doesn't want to talk to me, and he's now giving me the silent treatment. I begged him to come with me for marriage counseling, but he won't. I'm feeling so guilty for the way I cheated, but I am so hurt that John doesn't want to help fix our marriage. Do I just walk away? Do I go with Randy? The stress is killing me, and I don't know what to do. Please help me. Sincerely, Mary.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the marriage if your spouse won't even talk about it?
Well, that, of course, that's a big issue right there. And I have to say, this letter is so, it's such a common issue. Do you know what I mean? This sort of thing can happen quite a lot. Clearly, you know, she says in the beginning, they had a marriage where there wasn't much intimacy happening, not just sexually, but, you know, the not talking is another form of that. It's mm-hmm. like, they're not, you know, 20, 25 years together, but they haven't yet been in that place where they can talk about stuff that's super uncomfortable.
Yeah, it sounds like they're pretty much leading separate lives anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But she also didn't just want to throw over the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting.
Right.
And so if John were interested in, you know, it's interesting. We sort of have to read between the lines a little bit, because she didn't say, does he want to stay married?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't quote him as saying, she said, well, I'm looking at the letter, he was very angry and hurt and said he can never trust me again. He didn't say he wanted a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say, you know, that's going to be the way it is from now on. Well, he sort of
right,
did.
He's not throwing her furniture around the lawn, though.
He's not, exactly. You know? He's not throwing her stuff out. So there's some hope there. That if she can, and here, you know, use one of my favorite phrases, if she can get hold of herself, if she can recognize what she did, clearly she feels guilty about it, but I think it's appropriate guilt, right? It was wrong that she did that.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, it was meaningful that she did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, if she can look at her own behavior and not merely condemn the wrong parts, okay, fair enough, but also recognize she's not crazy, she's not fundamentally evil, she did something wrong, but there was a context for it. And if she can actually look at that herself, she might be able to take that to her husband and, you know, without sort of begging him, it isn't about begging him, it's take it to her husband and say, look, I know what I did was wrong, but there was something about it that has taught me something. I didn't realize the extent to which I was missing intimacy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to work on that with you, because I do love you, and we have this life together that I cherish. And if she could bring herself around to that and say that to him, there's no guarantee, but there's at least the possibility that he would then be willing to talk to her about it. And that's, you know, a lot of couples end up in my office pretty much there.
Do you think it would help her, even if he won't go for therapy, for her to, you know, seek out some therapy and help her deal with her own feelings and how she can present it to John?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I say absolutely. It's funny. I'll qualify that a little bit. Of course, that could be helpful to her. The reason I'm qualifying it a little is, you know, among my colleagues in the profession, this is a phenomenon that's been documented. You know, some people have done some research on this. I think William Doherty is the name that comes to mind. Listeners, you can Google that and see if I'm remembering the right guy who's written about this. That individual therapy with some therapists can have the effect of undermining marriages, even if it's a fairly good marriage.
Hmm.
Because some individual therapists really are pretty sour on the whole concept of marriage. And so they will often invite someone to so focus on their own comfort or their own feelings about stuff that they will ignore aspects of their being part of a bigger system. So there's a risk in going to individual therapy that, you know, it may sort of push things in the direction of divorce. Mm. On the other hand, there's plenty of individual therapists who wouldn't do that, you know, and I don't know how you distinguish. It's not always so clear. But yeah, short answer, certainly it could well be very helpful for her to go and sort that out. I think the part that I think she needs is to recover her own dignity. You know what I mean? It's that. It's having faith in her own validity.
Yeah.
That will let her then present to John whatever she feels like presenting.
Well, I get the feeling that she wants with John what she had with Randy.
Mm-hmm.
That she doesn't want to leave him and go to Randy.
Yeah.
She wants that intimacy, that excitement, to reignite the marriage.
Funny you should mention. She wants to reignite the spark. Is that
I think
what you're
she
saying?
Does. I think that their relationship has lost its intimacy.
Yeah.
And I think, she'd like to get it back. And it doesn't sound like John is really working on that part, though. So how does that work as a therapist when one partner is willing to work on it, but the other one isn't?
Typically what happens, you know, if they can make it to my office, which mm-hmm. would imply, of course, John being willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Typically the way that could happen is, confronted with this crisis, John is going to have to look at his own assumptions about his marriage. I mean, that's what he's stuck with now. You know, he could decide to divorce his wife because the thought of being with someone who cheated on him is just unthinkable to him.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could say, this is incredibly painful, but if we're going to heal, it's going to be based on remaking our relationship into something better. And that here, I want to give a shout out to Esther Perel. It's one of the things, folks, you may have heard of her. She's a very well-known therapist. And mm-hmm. In her book, The State of Affairs, she says something that many of us who do this work also note, which is that if the marriage is going to continue, it won't be the way it was before. You're not going to go back to the way it was before.
Well, I hope not in this instance, boy, because it's not working.
Well, precisely. But, you know, you'd be amazed how much people would feel they would wish that it would.
Yeah.
Because at least it wasn't so, it didn't feel like a crisis.
Yeah.
You know, they found, it's in the terms of, from my book, they found they had stability, but they sacrificed intimacy to keep it. And often affairs are a way of shaking up the system. You know, affairs are a way of saying, wow, if intimacy is cut off, people will do something because they can't tolerate that. And that's basically what happened here.
Well, Mary, we hope you can, get a hold of yourself and maybe, explain to John and see a good couples therapist. Because I think this marriage can be helped one way or another. If you have questions or topics to suggest, please send your emails to bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, you can go to the podcast tab, which will give you access to all of our podcasts and also give you a way to suggest not only topics, but we're also always interested in finding people to interview. If you look back over our past podcasts, you'll note we've interviewed a bunch of really interesting folks about various topics, often about, you know, books that they have written on topics, but sometimes not. And you can feel free to suggest yourself if you would like to be on the show. If you think you would have some interesting stuff to say, we'd be very interested to hear from you. And you'll see on the podcast tab at brucechalmer.com, there's a place where you can request a time for us to interview you. In the course of doing that, we'll be asking you, what would you like to talk about? And that'll give us information so we'll know whether we think you'd be a good fit for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, Judy, tell our listeners about our upcoming topics.
Well, we have how to know when to call it quits, marriage versus living together, and possibly other topics, especially if you suggest them.
This podcast is based on the book, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And we're going to share a couple more of the rave reviews we've been getting for this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here's another one. Reigniting the Spark is a wonderful exploration for any couple wanting to move out of stress and into trust or from having a good relationship into having a great relationship. This book is for you if you want to create deeper connections with your partner while identifying what is getting in the way of joy and intimacy.
And here's yet another review.
Happily married for 13 years, I wasn't sure what this book would offer to me and my spouse. As it turns out, quite a bit. This book is not just for people in troubled situations, but for anyone who is seeking a higher level of satisfaction with their partner.
So, I hope you will acquire the book. You can get it anywhere books are sold. And when you do, send us your comments. And please also, whether or not you buy it on Amazon, if you would post a review on Amazon, that would be very helpful. That, for better or worse, that's how people find out about books these days. So we hope that you will do that and hope you enjoy the book. And so, until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.